broadcasting around the world on International Shortwave and on the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Aaron, and tonight, ancient aliens, religion. What does that mean to you? My guest tonight's going to talk about UFOs, the Bible, the Antichrist. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. You know, one of the things about the Bible, it was written in a time when people had no technology like we have today. And you view these things today in a literal sense, but you got to understand, like, when they were describing this stuff, they were actually describing things that they could, you know, Ezekiel's wheel, you know, a spoke within a spoke and, you know, fire on the outside of it. If that doesn't sound like a UFO, I don't know what does. Our guest tonight joins us, John Myler. You call yourself a Christian UFOologist. Can you talk to the audience a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I've been a Christian since I was 21 years old. Probably before that, but I mean, I come to this moment at 21. And I'd always been very spiritually inclined and looking into spiritual things for a very long time, since I was like 5. But when I had an encounter with Jesus that caused me to become a born-again Christian, I had to reconcile things that I believed all my life with my newfound faith. And that put me on this path, that reconciliation. For me, the idea of extraterrestrial life and UFOs, it never was an issue of whether or not they exist. I started with that premise. For me, it was more a path of how do I reconcile it? What are the implications? And so that's what I've been writing about for the past 25 years.
So you've been writing about this stuff for 25 years. You've got about, I think you said about 10 books that's out.
Yeah.
And this didn't...
Three of which are Christian ufology for the genre.
So, UFOs, extraterrestrials, did not destroy your Christian faith.
No, they didn't.
Now, for some people, that's a hard pill to swallow. So,
I could thank my great grandmother for part of that, for the bulk of that.
So when you made the statement that you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt the UFOs are real, extraterrestrials are not an issue, what makes you so confident in that?
First of all, my great grandmother gave a testimony that she'd actually witnessed one during broad daylight with her sister. And you kind of have to know who my great grandmother was in order to like do a double take when she said something like that. Our whole family, like, that was an eye opener evening when she basically revealed to all of us at a family gathering that when she was a teenager back in 19-aught, whatever, turn of the century, that she had seen a UFO flying, hovering, completely silent. She saw the glass dome on the top, or transparent dome. She even saw the occupant, and he turned and he looked at her as he flew by. So that's how close this thing was. About 30 feet off the ground, and he just hovered across the plains of Kentucky. And at this time in her life, she'd never even seen an automobile, much less something that could fly. So she lived out in the middle of nowhere. Her and her sister, they saw this thing, and he flew off over these bluffs and then zipped off toward the sky. And let me back up and say that my great-grandmother was the wife of an evangelist. My great-grandfather was an evangelist all his life. Since he was in his early 20s, he set off on the ministry, and he preached the gospel all across the United States. They traveled for 30 years. He was retired, and my great-grandmother had read the Bible once, she told me, 27 times. Because every time I saw her, she was reading it. So I asked her, how many times is it? And you're always reading this book. Aren't you ever going to get done? And she said, well, I finished reading it 27 times. I'm on my 27th reading. So she lived, ate, breathed, drank Jesus. She watched. If the TV was on, it was gospel. If the radio was playing, it was gospel music. She knew how to play the piano, all gospel songs. Every conversation had Jesus in there somewhere. I mean, she was literally consumed with Christ and her life and her ministry. Her and my great-grandfather were still involved in intercessory prayer ministry in their later years in their retirement. So everything about them was the Christian faith, and that is where I get my heritage, even though I didn't really come to Christ until later in life. So to hear her tell this story about how she and her sister saw something, a UFO, she said it was a UFO. So she read this account out of the news. She had the whole family was there, and she made us all be quiet and listen to her. And she read an account in the newspaper of this wild goose chase between police officers and a UFO in the outskirts of Madera. The scene that described in that article was similar, very similar to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So it even makes me wonder if they got that whole scenario for that movie from what happened in Madera, because if I could find a newspaper article dated to 1975, it was right around the time that movie came out.
Now, just a crazy question. The newspaper article that you're speaking of, this doesn't have to do with anything with the Kelly, Kentucky incident, does it?
I have no idea. I don't know.
My understanding, in Kelly, Kentucky, which is close to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, there was an incident in a shootout with aliens and the police. And it's just interesting hearing another story from Kentucky in a different city. I wanted to identify that as either the same incident or a separate incident. That's just interesting to me. Keep going, please.
Yeah. I honestly, I don't know. And I've actually done research trying to find this article dating to 1975. That's when she told the story. I was 5 years old. So I know how memory works, how your mind can kind of like rearrange things or get things mixed up. And I wanted to go back to the original source if I could find it, but I couldn't find it. But she did read this article. The whole family remembers it because it was an eye-opener, like I said. After she read this article, she dropped the newspaper and she said, when I was a young girl, I saw a UFO. And then she proceeded to describe the incident, how she and her sister were on the plains of Kentucky out in the middle of nowhere, and they saw this thing fly by. It was cigar-shaped, she said. Had a bubble on the top, the occupant inside, and it was just slowly hovering, completely silent, and it flew right past him, and he turned and looked at her. I didn't even know what a UFO was. I was 5 years old. But just looking at everybody's faces in the room, I was like very intrigued, like, okay, what's grandma talking about? Because there was an EF Hutton moment. You could have heard a pin drop. And then she said, I don't care what people think, those things are real. And then she said that she and her sister went home. They told their mother. And their mother was very, very religious, very holy roller. For an example, she once brought a deck of cards home, and her mother burned it in the oven because they were from the devil. You know, cards is where people get shot. You know, they're evil. Burn it. So her grandmother or her mother did not want her ever to tell anybody about this story ever again, and basically swore her and her sister to silence. and they weren't allowed to talk to anyone about it. And then her sister died shortly after that. So for the bulk of her life, my grandmother, my great-grandmother kept this to herself. And then reading that article that night back in 1975, I guess it just brought it all back, and she just had to get it off her chest and told everybody. And she said, I don't care what people think. Those things are real. And my great-grandmother never really saw any kind of, apparently never saw anything, any mix-up with that in terms of how it affected her faith. She just, you know, they're both real. No problem. Next, you know, no issue. No issue whatsoever in her mind. It's just, they're real, you know. So I guess maybe she figured God just created other life out there too. And she didn't put much more thought into it after that. But I could say that back in the early 90s when I came out of the Army, so something that I included in my new book, and I also have it in Aliens in the Bible, is an encounter I had in the jungle of Panama during the Panamanian conflict. I saw something that, according to science, can't possibly exist. And I wasn't alone. Somebody was with me, and he also witnessed this thing that apparently communicated with me. So we could talk about that later if you want. But to me, that was like validation, public validation in this case, because there was somebody else that used to taunt me about, you know, my paranormal proclivities, and here he was stuck in the middle of this episode of the Twilight Zone. And it was a fantastic moment because I actually got to see something with my own eyes while I was completely perfectly awake, conscious, not under any influence of any kind of drug or alcohol or anything. I was on guard duty in the jungle of Panama.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, I knew that these things, that there's things out there, there's a reality around us that doesn't fit neatly into the little box.
Well, when we come back from the break, I'm going to have you talk about this experience in Panama. And then we've got to hit up our next subject, which is proof of alien existence in the Bible. To have a grandmother that had her convictions the way that he described it, and to say that she believed in UFOs and still kept her faith. Whew. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Radio Disclosure. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. John Myler, author of 10 books on religion and UFOs, and he's getting ready to tell us a story. He's sitting out in the jungle, serving his country. Did I say that correct? You're serving at this time?
Yes. You got it correct. This was during the Panamanian conflict back in 1989 and 1990.
Well, before we continue, I want to say thank you for serving the United States as an armed force. Now, that's my hat is off to you, sir. So what happened out in that jungle?
Okay. So I was on guard duty when we showed up in Panama. I was part of Operation Nimrod Dancer, which was the lead element. So we went there and we established our base at Fort Sherman. And we were doing convoys throughout Panama, up through the Panama Canal and whatnot, all leading up to the actual conflict and the invasion. And then I was there for Operation Just Cause right after that. So we were there for a total of 6 months. So it was during leading up to the war or conflict that we were doing patrols and setting up guard posts in the perimeter. And there was a road that meandered off into the jungle behind Fort Sherman, a very dangerous place. they had their actual own zoo behind the base where they had an anaconda, a jaguar, and several other deadly species there in the zoo that they caught in the jungle. And they used it to brief the soldiers about, you know, the dangers in the jungle and be careful. So not far from that zoo, it was a little road that kind of just sort of turned into a trail, and then it just sort of fizzled out and didn't exist anymore. And they had us encamped along this trail because it was a possible avenue where the Panamanian Defense Forces might try to infiltrate the back end of the base if they were crazy enough to do it. Because that jungle was, no kidding, a deadly place. So here I was in the jungle, and it was about midnight, and it was nearing the end of my shift, and I was with Corporal, I'll call him Sting to protect his name. But this guy used to torment me to no end because one of our first land navigation exercises, we were sitting around in the dark with several hours to kill, and I thought it felt kind of like a camping episode. So I said, has anyone ever seen a ghost? And they all about flipped out, and because I thought, you know, ghost story, camping. And ever since I asked that stupid question, I was the brunt of a lot of hazing and mockery because I was interested in things like that. So here I was with Corporal Sting, who taunted me the most. And I saw this light flashing on and off about 300 or 400 yards away. And it was quite a far ways away to be seeing it. And it was as bright as a camera flash and about the size of a soccer ball.
Oh, my.
And it would flash on like a camera flash, really bright and very instant. And then it would just disappear, and it wasn't there. And then when it flashed on again, it was closer. And it was doing this for about 5 minutes, getting closer and closer to our position. So I finally realized this thing was making a beeline straight for our command, our post. And I woke up Corporal Sting, and I told him, you know, it's time for your shift. And by the way, there's this flashing ball of light out there. I have no idea what that thing is. And he kind of woke up, but then he thought I was messing with him, and he like started cussing me out and everything. And but then it flashed again, and I said, no, I'm not kidding with you. Look, you just saw that. I know you saw it out of the corner of your eye. And so he starts looking around, and next thing you know, this thing comes all the way up. It's about 30 feet off the ground, up in the trees and in the vines. And when it got to our position, it stopped. And it kept flashing on about once every 2 to 3 minutes. It would flash to let us know it was still there. So I'm going through my mind. I was encyclopedic at this time with paranormal stuff because, like I said, I'd always been interested in it. I said, that's not ball lightning because I got this M60 right here, and it's not going for it. There's my radio full of lithium batteries and a 6-foot whip antenna, and it's not striking it. Plus, it's not acting like ball lightning. Ball lightning zips around wildly until it hits something and diffuses. It doesn't keep flashing on and off like a camera flash. And Corporal Sting was like, well, maybe it's a laser deployed from one of the aircraft carriers or something. I said, lasers require line of sight. This thing is down inside the trees. It's not a laser. So he's like trying to figure out what it is. And I said, this is not physical. I don't hear anything. And I had night vision, AMPVS-7 goggles. And I'm like looking through these things, and I am not seeing anything. And I hand the goggles to him, and we're like looking around, and he's like, wait, I think I saw something, an orange light. Well, obviously he didn't see anything because the AMPVS-7 only show green light, so I don't know what the heck he was talking about. But I was looking through those same goggles, and I didn't see anything whatsoever, and I didn't hear anything. And then I told him, look, you know, this thing came right up to our position, and then it stopped, and it's just staying in that one spot. That, to me, resembles intelligence. And so I said, I'm going to talk to it. And he started flipping out and saying, hell, if you are, blah, blah, blah. And, I'm like, you know what?
So he started talking to this thing, is what you're saying.
Yes.
The guy that was harassing you about ghost stories, I got to say this, and was mad at you that you woke him up and told him there was something out there, starts, see? Yeah. Okay, keep going. Exactly. I'm sorry.
I'm loving it because I'm like, even if this thing strikes me dead, I'm satisfied at this point. And I told him, this isn't swamp gas. It's a greenish, hazy glow. This isn't ball lightning. This is not anything that resembles any kind of technology. It's flying, and it's hovering in the same spot. It's generating a lot of power to generate that kind of light, and yet we don't hear anything. This is of a transdimensional nature, whatever it is, because it's zippy, it's popping in and out of this dimension, whatever it is. I couldn't see it, I couldn't hear it, and it's there, and it is acting intelligent. So I said, I'm going to talk to it. You know, I've watched Star Trek way too much to pass this up. So I walk out in the middle of the trail, and I said, look, I mean you no harm. We're here. I mean, despite all this weaponry, you see that I've disarmed myself. My M60's right there. We mean you peace. I don't have any hostility toward you whatsoever. I just want to understand you. I would like it if you could reveal yourself to me or communicate with me. Who are you? What are you? And then I just was quiet for a minute. About 30 seconds or so after I introduced myself, I had this incredibly overwhelming presence. That's the best I could describe it. It just totally hit me like, it's the feeling of being watched, except multiplied or amplified like times 100. This thing emanated a presence that was so powerful, it freaked me out. Like, and I felt it moving toward me, even though I couldn't see it. And I don't know how it made me feel that. So this was right after I introduced myself, and suddenly I'm feeling it. I'm feeling its presence right where I was looking. And so I'm thinking, wait, maybe this thing is going to take some kind of a shape or something. I don't know. So I lifted up the night vision goggles, and I'm looking, but I'm not seeing anything. But I still feel this presence, and then I feel it moving toward me. And so I'm talking and narrating, and I say, Corporal Singh, I feel it moving. I feel it moving. I feel it moving. And I'm freaking out because it's coming right at me. And I'm moving these PVS 7 goggles where I think it's going. And it flew right over my head, and I felt it. It's like my hair lifted. This thing was powerful. Its presence was very powerful. And I said, I don't know how I know it's moving, but it's moving. And I turned and I did a complete 180, and I was looking in the opposite direction. And I said, the next time it's going to flash right. And I pointed, and I also had the goggles up, and I was looking at a particular location. And right when I said the word there and pointed, it flashed exactly where I pointed. So to this day, I can't tell you how it made me feel where it was moving. How it made me feel that it was sentient and that it was there. But it did. And it was a very rudimentary form of communication, I guess, because it didn't have any kind of language associated with it. But I opened up a dialogue, I introduced myself, and I asked for it to reveal itself. And what it did was it showed me that it was a sentient being, that it was a living, real, true entity, and that it was there. That was the presence, that it just emanated a presence to let me know that it was there. And it showed me where it was at, even though I had no physical senses that could have relayed that to me in a natural way that I can explain. So I got really excited because I spun around, I said to Corporal Singh, I was like, did you see that? Did you see that? Right when I said there, right when I pointed, it was flashing exactly where I pointed. And so I started talking and talking to this thing, wanting it to do something else. But It never did anything beyond that in terms of like spectacular, you know, assuming a human form or having a conversation or telling me about the metaphysics of the universe or nothing crazy outlandish like that. It just flashed exactly. I knew when and where it was going to flash, and I don't know how I knew that other than it let me know that it was there. It proceeded to continue. It did a complete circle around our perimeter, flashing on and off as it went over the next 5 minutes or so, kind of like getting a complete perimeter of our position. And then it went down the road, and we had two other positions further down into the jungle, and it circled each one of them, flashing on and off as it went. One of the guys from each location told me that the next day. So I have no idea what that was, but I do know that I don't think anything in the natural realm can come even close to explaining what it was. I have read in Dungeons and Dragons book, there's something called Will-o'-the-Wisp. I believe it's an old Irish or Scottish legend about a ball of light that lives in swampy, jungly areas and gets people, it provokes their curiosity and gets them to follow it, and you shouldn't because it'll lead you into a pit or a deadly trap or something. It's like some sort of demonic type thing. In the movie Brave, they actually feature this little thing flashing on and off, and I think that that's the closest I can come to explaining it, and maybe that's what it was. Maybe there's a type of entity. It's like a transdimensional entity. You mentioned something about Bigfoot in our earlier conversation. I think that Bigfoot could possibly be transdimensional. But
most thing, definitely.
Whatever it was, it was not a normal entity in terms of finding it in a biology textbook, but it was certainly alive, and it certainly exhibited intelligence, almost like an animal-like curiosity about us.
Well, when we come back from the break, John, we're going to hit up some more of this biblical craziness of UFOs. Doesn't that just frighten you? This is Radio Disclosure, and we'll be back. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. We're going to have John come back again. He just got done telling this story that UFOs in the Bible. He's been doing this for years. There's 10 books out. That story you just told, John, where can people get that story at?
I have an Amazon author page, but probably the easiest links would be aliensandtheantichrist.com. Also, aliensinthebible.com. Aliensinthebible.com. And aliensandtheantichrist.com.
So
I got a couple of domains out there, but those will go to all of my books.
So where do you want to start if somebody is sitting out there?
You could also type my name in Amazon. I have an author page in Amazon, an Amazon author page. My name, just J-O-H-N, Mylor, M-I-L-O-R, and you'll find my books in Amazon. After I got out of the Army, my life was kind of a mess. I was a worldly person and kind of had my own philosophies about moral accountability, and I was kind of in a downhill spiral, but I believe God gave me kind of a last warning, like, if you don't change the way you're living, you're going to have some serious consequences on your way, because I was entering the age of accountability at 21. So when I was 21, I had this dream where Jesus came to me in a dream and shook me up. And then when I woke up, I asked who that was in the dream, and I audibly heard him speak his name, Jesus. And I felt him in my room, and it was just the most outstanding experience to this day. It was like shook my foundations, and so my reality was rewritten. But a lot of the things that I had come to know and understand, they were still there, you know? So I'm left with all of these bizarre pieces to this puzzle and wondering, how do I assemble this thing? I'm an intellectual person, a very inquisitive intellectual person. I drove my mom. She probably was one of the few people in the world that had patience with me when I was a kid, because I asked why about everything. But my mom, God bless her, the way she'd explain things was just, I put two and two together about Santa Claus, you know. I came to my mom and I said, look, there's something that's just not right about this. Our house doesn't have a chimney for starters, but I've been looking at all these presents. They say who they're to and from. I don't see Santa on hardly anything. That doesn't make sense. I kind of have an idea. There's way too many people for him to get to all these houses in one night. This is just, I'm not buying it. Something's not right. And so mom proceeded to tell me that there really was a guy. And the real story of St. Nicholas, Bishop of Maitreya, is actually a fascinating story. He's a 16-year-old kid that inherited a fortune from both his parents, deceased, gave it all away, and devoted his life to Jesus. And you can even research it. There's miracles attributed to the real St. Nicholas. So, and he actually punched somebody out during one of those early councils. So the real Santa Claus is actually a character. And that's what my mom chose to tell me. So the way she kind of raised me is sort of conducive to being, having this kind of open mind that's willing to set aside things that are demanding to get reconciled. I call it my open file cabinet philosophy, where the human tendency is to want to close the case and move on. I leave cases open. I don't have the answers. I know I don't, and a lot of things I won't ever fully answer everything. But I have open files with all these clues, and I could put things together a lot, and sometimes they start to make a lot of sense. And so that's what I did after I had my Jesus moment. I started reading the Bible, like, for the first time, and never really paid attention to the Bible until I started reading it for reals, and I was shocked. Book of Genesis, you know, I'm asking all these questions. I didn't get far in it. Genesis chapter 6, and I'm reading about yes. these otherworldly beings, and they're marrying human women, and they're having giants, and I'm like, well, I remember giants. I remember David and Goliath. But I never asked, you know, why didn't I ask my grandmother about Goliath? Where did this character come from? How did he get big like that? What's the deal? And now I find out, you know, they're half human, half angel. And my mind immediately connected an alien presence to that. Like, well, this is a genetic variation. Is it, you know, he even has six fingers in this other description of one of the other giants. Six fingers, six toes on each foot. Pterodactylism, which it's very unusual to have a perfectly even distribution of six fingers and six toes, by the way. But I'm like reading about giants and stuff, and I start writing notes. Before I know it, I've got tons and tons of notes on this bizarre research that's connecting extraterrestrial life and UFOs and stuff. And I do remember hearing about Eric von Däniken, but I also knew that he believed that God was an alien. So from a Christian perspective, that like automatically wants to dismiss him. But I was like, you know what, I could still use his research, but I'm a Christian. So, you know, what the Bible says, God comes first. I'm not going to ditch my faith over this. And then I was kind of surprised remembering back to about my great-grandmother, like how she was able to just go on with her life and not let this face her faith whatsoever. And just, she obviously had even more of an open file than me, because that whole reality is there and it just didn't even bother her. But I can tell you, when I started researching this in the early 90s, the obvious connection with extraterrestrials was evolution is just right there, knocking on the door and saying, hey, if you believe in extraterrestrials, you believe they're scientists, and you believe all of this scientific worldview, and Christianity's out the window. Forget it. You know, because life's on other planets and evolution is the way. And your Bible is nothing but a myth. So that was what von Däniken and Sitchin and some of these others were saying, but I refused to believe that. And from what I was reading in the Bible, I didn't see the necessity for it. The problem is, I think people cross the bridge. Aliens and extraterrestrials can be the same thing. I believe they are. I believe the Bible describes an extraterrestrial presence in a lot of detail. But to suggest that God is an alien, you know, that's absurd. God created the universe and everything in it. He doesn't need technology. However, God is also a personal being, and we have a relationship with him. He came down and he became a human being. You can't get more personal than that.
Yeah.
So to suggest that God might join angels inside of an extraterrestrial spacecraft, I don't have a problem with that. But other people might say that, you know, confuse that as God being an ET, when in fact he's not. And so that's basically what I'm doing with my research. I'm talking about the implications, mostly from a theological perspective, and why it shouldn't be a problem for people to believe these things, because I think that there's room for it.
So what would you say if you were going to start? And somebody says to you, John, where is the best example of aliens in the Bible? And where would you start on that to show them?
I believe you mentioned it in your introduction. Ezekiel chapters 1 and 10 talk about Ezekiel's wheel. So you get angels associated with a chariot. That's also in 2 Kings. So yeah, it makes you have to ask the question, why would angels need a chariot? A chariot is technology. Even the ancient chariot is chariot. It's a technology. So you have to ask, okay, why would a chariot be even in the picture? So setting that aside, you have to accept, okay, angels do use chariots. Is it a chariot that what we saw 2,000 years ago? Would an angel be flying? And something like, would a chariot have wheels if it could fly? Does that make sense? The
No.
whole point of the wheel is to reduce friction so that you're not dragging something, but rather rolling it on a wheel. So you put wheels on it if it's subject to gravity. But if it's flying, it has propulsion, it's not going to have wheels.
Right.
To roll with. Another thing is, if it's moving forward, the ancients would have said, okay, propulsion is a horse, you know? So what would you describe something that's moving forward with fire around it? You would say maybe it's horses of fire, which is exactly what he says. You know, in 2 Kings, Elijah says, you know, behold the chariot of Israel and the horses of fire thereof. He's describing fire around something that he's flying. He's saying chariot, I believe, in the generic sense to refer to a vehicle. The Ezekiel goes into even more detail. He describes a glass dome on the top, chrysolite, you know, a transparent substance that he could see through it. He describes being taken up in whatever this was. He describes wings that are straight, that touch on the ends, wings above and wings below that do not flap. If you were looking at a flying saucer from the side, you would see what looks like paneling extending from the top down, paneling from the bottom extending up and meeting in the middle. And those wings would be straight, not flapping, and they'd be touching in the middle. You'd be seeing the side view of a saucer. That's what he actually describes. And he even goes a step further and says that it's the color of beryllium on the bottom. Beryllium happens to be a heat-resistant metal used for rocket nozzles. So they use it in space technology. So he's referring to this metal on the bottom of this thing that is associated with space technology. He's talking about this transparent bubble on top. He's talking about the shape, the overall shape, a wheel within a wheel.
This is, oh my gosh. We're going to come back to more Ezekiel's wheel. I brought it up. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure, talking with John Myler. Ezekiel's wheel. So you've got a perfect description of a UFO from this guy. This is written in the Bible. How many thousands of years ago?
Jeez. Well, Ezekiel's Old Testament. So, yeah, maybe about 3,000 years ago.
So, what other stories and references in the Bible could you point to and say?
Well, I talked about Genesis 6, the Nephilim. So in my latest book that I'll be coming out with in about a month or so, it'll be titled Christian UFOlogy, and it's basically the second edition to Aliens and the Antichrist. I have one of the beginning chapters talks about the four categories of Christian UFOlogists. Category one, they don't exist, they're not real, it's a hoax. Category two, there's something there, but it's all demonic. Just take that label of demonic and paste it on everything and be content with that and walk away. Category three, it's more rare, but there are actually people who follow it. Dr. Barry Downing, he's a pastor of like 30 years, and he believes that they are, for the most part, divine manifestations. He would mention Ezekiel chapter 1 and 10 as an example. Another obvious example would be the cylinder, the cloud by day, fire by night, UFO that hovered over Israel for 40 years and fed them in the desert and split the Red Sea and all kinds of other interesting things. And the reason why people would like have a problem with that is because the Bible associates that with a manifestation of God. But like I say, I believe God delegates a lot of his activities to angels, but then he joins his angels too. So he's a very personal being. And, I mean, that's why he took on human form. He likes to interact inside of this reality that he created. He can exist outside of it. He's the only entity in all of existence that can simply step outside of time-space and exist outside of his creation. But on those instances, I do believe he popped in there here and there, may have actually even been on a UFO with some angels. I know that that's an odd perspective, but that's kind of how I see it. Because it looks like a UFO is in the picture. It split the Red Sea. It did all these, helped Moses do all these miracles. I don't have a problem with suggesting that that was some kind of advanced technology that the angels were wielding. But with the caveat that God is God. God can do whatever he wants. But I think that God delegates a lot of things to his angels, and they use all kinds of things. Some of their abilities are innate. They have supernatural power. I think angels can fly without technology necessarily. Some of them might be really powerful. I think Star Trek actually is very accurate in terms of having a wide variety of life in the cosmos. Some of it's like the Q, for those familiar with Star Trek. These beings are so powerful, they can pop from planet to planet. I think Satan was able to do that. I think the Bible's reference to him, I believe it's in Ezekiel 28, where it talks about Lucifer walking amidst the stones of fire. I think he's talking about solar systems. Lucifer might have been able to just teleport from one planet to another at will. So there's angels they're powerful like that, but probably the bulk of them aren't. The bulk of them need technology or use technology because the Bible discusses it. It refers to angels with chariots, and it has examples like that giant cylinder of fire hovering above Israel. There's a lot of examples of technology in the Bible, and I have an actual appendix in my book that I'm going to have in the back that refers to it. And I think a lot of miracles can be attributed to technology. That's not to diminish the miracles. It's just to point out that God has a wide variety of methods that he uses. And I think that people are short-sighted if they refuse to acknowledge that God would use something as bizarre as a being from another world with advanced technology to do his will. So
even in the book of Job, I mean, you've got the scenario where it's talking about Satan, and God and Satan are talking, and he goes, "Satan, what have you been doing?" And he goes, "I've been walking to and fro from within the earth."
Yes.
And then in the book of Job, you've got the scenario where Job's cattle. Do you know the reference I'm speaking of there? I think the dreaded nation of the Chaldeans took Job's cattle. Either his cattle or something. They took one of those things, and they swooped down in their chariot with a beam of light and collected them all in one swoop. There's so many different references that I think for a close-minded Christian that can close their eyes and pray but also not believe that there is life on another planet and God can use those creatures just like he uses us, I think is very short-sighted, like you're saying.
Yeah, I think that people are going to be forced into having to do some reassessing on how they've interpreted Scripture in the near future. I don't know exactly how near, but I do know that this year the government seems to be a lot more open. Pilots in the Navy are reporting safety incidents with UFOs now, and they're not losing their security clearances by going public doing it. There's UFOs that are do a search on USS on the SS Nimitz and UFOs and Navy, and you'll find some interesting articles about things that happened back in 2015 and since then, creating safety incidents with Navy pilots, and the Navy pilots are coming forward saying, by pretending these things are not happening and that they don't exist, it's going to end up getting someone killed.
Now, would you be a believer in the fact that since the start of the pandemic, there has been, and even a little bit before then, but especially since the start of the pandemic, there has been definitely an increase in sightings?
Maybe so. There's been definitely, it was ironically, I'm like watching the news one evening and I'm seeing Walmart looting, and then they come out with, "Oh, by the way, the Navy just released this official footage from taken from their aircraft, and they don't know what it is." And then, you know, back on to the people that are rioting and looting and, you know, the pandemic madness. So they just slipped it right in between these stories, and it, like, went by completely unnoticed. And I watched the news segment, and I was astonished. They're releasing it. This is like top secret information that is now being released to the public. And there's another show, Undisclosed, America's UFO Secret UFO Program. And I started watching that, and Senator Harry Reid was on there saying, of course, he's ranting about how Christians just need to, you know, set aside their beliefs and accept that there's a reality that they refuse to deal with. I don't really take it that Harry Reid sounds like a Christian to me, but he's kind of on board with just forget the Christians. You know, we need to just come out with this and let let the cards fall where they're going to fall. Harry Reid happened to be in charge of this UFO program, where it was basically an updated version of Project Blue Book, but it was aimed more directly at the military and not for public consumption. So I know that based on the findings of that show, it sounds like they want to go public, but they're afraid because they think that Christians are just going to panic. And even just recently, apparently some Secretary of Defense, I guess, or equivalent in Israel came out and said Trump almost blew the lid, that extraterrestrials are real, they're working with our governments, and we have an agreement with them right now. And Trump almost came out with it, this guy said, which would be easy to dismiss if it were not for this person's credentials. So you might want to look that up, Israeli military defense official discloses UFO reality. So there's more and more of this stuff that has definitely been coming out since the pandemic.
Yeah, it seems like there's been a massive outbreak. I know when I'm outside at night and I look up at the sky, I see more activity up there than I ever have. Again, John, where can people go to find your books again?
You can find me by searching for my name on Amazon, John Milor, M-I-L-O-R. You can also find my books on aliensinthebible.com. All of my books, most of my books are on there, and there's links to the Amazon website.
So, John, the news is you have a new book coming out soon, and when you do, we're going to have you back, I think, and chat more about this subject. Like to say thank you for WTWW, the international shortwave station carrying us tonight, and all of our local affiliates. Check us out online at radiodisclosure.com. I'm going to put a couple links up to John's Amazon page and some of his other pages up there, so you can go up there and find his books. Thank you for listening. This was Radio Disclosure.